When Hrafn had first arrived at the outer city of Kaei, he had noted how indefensible it was. Now, standing atop the wall of Elantris, Hrafn could see that he had actually underestimated how pathetic Kaei's fortifications were. Beautiful terraced steps ran up the outside of Elantris' wall, providing outside access to the top. They were firm stone constructions. It would be impossible to destroy them in an emergency. If Kaei's inhabitants retreated into Elantris, they would be trapped, not protected. There were no archers. The Elantris City guard members carried large, unwieldy spears that looked like they were far too heavy to be thrown. They held themselves with a proud air, wearing unarmored yellow and brown uniforms, and they obviously considered themselves far above the regular city militia. From what Hrafn had heard, however, the guard wasn't even really necessary to keep the Elantrians in. The creatures rarely tried to escape, and the city wall was far too large for the guard to patrol extensively. The force was more of a public relations operation than a true military. The people of Kaei felt much more comfortable living beside Elantris when they knew a troop of soldiers watched the city. However, Hrafn suspected that in a war, the guard members would be hard-pressed to defend themselves, let alone protect Kaei's population. Aerilan was a ripe jewel waiting to be pillaged. If Fjordan didn't conquer Aerilan soon, then the kingdom would certainly collapse beneath the weight of a dozen different problems. Beyond inept leadership, Aerilan suffered from an overtaxed working class, religious uncertainty, and dwindling resources. All of these factors competed to deliver the final blow. Dilaf stood on the other side of the wall, looking out over Elantris. His eyes were wide, like those of a man who had been punched in the stomach and his teeth were clenched. Hrafn half expected him to start frothing at the mouth.
I hate them.
Hrafn crossed the wall to stand beside Dilaf. Since the wall had not been constructed for military purposes, there were no battlements, but both sides had raised parapets for safety. Hrafn rested against one of these, looking out to study Elantris. There wasn't much to see. He'd been in slums more promising than Elantris. The buildings were so decayed that it was a miracle any of them still had roofs, and the stench was revolting. At first, he doubted anything could possibly be alive inside the city. But then he saw some forms running furtively along the side of a building. They were crouched with their hands outstretched, as if prepared to fall on all fours. One paused, looking up. It was bald, and at first Hrafn thought its skin was dark, like that of a member of the Jindo noble caste. However, he could see splotches of light gray on the creature's skin as well. Great uneven pale masses, like lichen on a stone. He squinted, leaning forward against the parapet. He couldn't make out the Elantrian's eyes, but somehow Hrafn knew they would be wild and feral, darting around like those of an anxious animal. The creature took off with its companions, its pack.
So this is what the Rio did.
It made beasts out of gods. Yadath had simply taken what was in their hearts and showed it for the world to see. According to Durethi philosophy, the only thing that separated men from the animals was religion. Men could serve Yadeth's empire. Beasts could serve only their lusts. The Elantrians represented the ultimate flaw of human arrogance. They had set themselves up as gods. Their hubris had earned their fate. In another situation, Hrafn would have been content in leaving them to their punishment. However, he happened to need them. Hrafn turned to Dilaf.
The first step in taking control of a nation, Artith, is the simplest. You find someone to hate. Tell me of them, Artith.
Hrafn entered his room inside the chapel, accompanied by Dilaf.
I want to know everything you know.
They are foul, loathsome creatures. Thinking of them makes my heart grow sick and my mind feel tainted. I pray every day for their destruction.
Artith, I understand you have strong feelings, but if you are to be my Odaif, you will need to see through your prejudices. Yadis has placed these Elantrians before us with a purpose in mind, and I cannot discover that purpose if you refuse to tell me anything useful.
Yes, Your Grace.
Did you see Elantris before its fall?
Yes.
Was it as beautiful as people say?
Pristine, kept white by the hands of slaves.
Slaves?
All of Aerilan's people were slaves to the Elantrians, Your Grace. They were false gods, giving promises of salvation in exchange for sweat and labor.
And their legendary powers.
Lies, like their supposed divinity. A carefully crafted hoax to earn them respect and fear.
Following the Riald, there was chaos, correct?
Chaos, killing, riots, and panic, Your Grace. Then the merchants seized power.
And the Elantrians?
There were few left. Most had been killed in the riots. Those remaining were confined to Elantris, as were all the men that the Sheod took from that day forward. They looked much as you just saw them, wretched and subhuman. Their skin was patched with black scars, like someone had pulled away the flesh and revealed the darkness underneath.
And the transformations, did they abate at all after the Riald?
They continue, Your Grace. They happen all across Aerilan.
Why do you hate them so, Ardeth?
Because they are unholy!
And?
They lied to us, Your Grace! They made promises of eternity, but they couldn't even maintain their own divinity. We listened to them for centuries, and were rewarded with a group of impotent, vile cripples!
You hate them because they disappointed you?
Not me. My people. I was a follower of Dorethi years before the Riod.
Then you are convinced that there is nothing supernatural about the Elantrians, other than the fact that Yadith has cursed them?
Yes, Your Grace. As I said, the Elantrians created many falsehoods to reinforce their divinity.
Hraithun shook his head and began to remove his armor.
How, then, do you explain the sudden transformation of ordinary people into Elantrians, Ardeth? Hate has weakened your ability to see, Ardeth.
Hraithun hung his breastplate on the wall beside his desk and smiled. He had just experienced a flash of brilliance. A portion of his plan suddenly fit into place.
You assume because Yadith did not give them powers, they did not have any.
What you say is...
Not blasphemy, Ardeth. Doctrine. There is another supernatural force besides our god.
The Svrakis.
Yes.
Svrakis. The souls of the dead men who hated Yadith. The opponents to all that was holy. According to Shu Dareth, there was nothing more bitter than a soul who had had its chance and thrown it away.
You think the Elantrians are Svrakis?
It is accepted doctrine that the Svrakis can control the bodies of the evil.
Hraithun unbuckled his greaves.
Is it so hard to believe that all this time they have been controlling bodies of the Elantrians? Making them appear as gods to fool the simple-minded and unspiritual?
You don't really believe it, do you?
It doesn't matter, Ardeth. The connection is logical. People will follow it. Right now, all they see are the abject remnants of what were once aristocrats. Men do not loathe such. They pity them. Demons, however, are something everyone can hate. If we denounce the Elantrians as devils, then we will have success. You already hate the Elantrians. That is fine. To make others join you, however, you'll have to give them more of a reason than they disappointed us.
Yes, Your Grace.
We are religious men, Ardeth, and we must have religious enemies. The Elantrians are Astrakis. No matter if they possess the souls of evil men long dead, or evil men now living.
Of course, Your Holiness. We will destroy them then?
Eventually. Right now, we will use them. You will find that hate can unify people more quickly and more fervently than devotion ever could.
Raoden stabbed the air with his finger. The air bled light. His fingertip left a glowing white trail behind it as he moved his arm, as if he were writing with paint on a wall, except without the paint and without the wall. He moved cautiously, careful not to let his finger waver. He drew a line about a hand span long from left to right, then pulled his finger down at a slight slant, drawing a curved line downward at the corner. Then he lifted his finger from the unseen canvas and replaced it to draw a dot in the center. Those three marks, two lines and a dot, were the starting point of every aeon. He continued, drawing the same three-line pattern at different angles, then added several diagonal lines. The finished drawing looked something like an hourglass, or perhaps two boxes placed on top of each other, pulling in slightly just near the middles. This was Aeon Aeshi, the ancient symbol for light. The character brightened momentarily, seeming to pulse with life. Then it flashed weakly, like a man heaving his last breath. The aeon disappeared, its light fading from brightness to dimness to nothing.
You're much better at that than I am, Sewell. I usually make one line a little too big or slant it a bit too much, and the whole thing fades away before I'm done.
It's not supposed to be like this. They're supposed to do something.
They did once, Sewell, but not since the Riode. Whatever took the life from Elantris also stole Aeondor's power. Now all we can do is paint pretty characters in the air.
Raoden nodded, drawing his own Aeon. Aeon Rao. Four circles with one large square in the center, all five connected by lines. The Aeon reacted as all the others had.
Disappointing, Kolo?
Very.
Raoden pulled over a chair and sat down. They were still in Galadon's small underground study.
If Aeondor worked, the Elantrians would still rule in Aerilon. Riode or no Riode.
I know. I just wonder what happened. What changed?
The world wonders with you, Sewell.
They must be related. The change in Elantris. The way the Shaeod started making people demons rather than gods. The ineffectiveness of Aeondor.
You aren't the first person to notice that, not by far. However, no one is likely to find the answer. The powerful in Aerilon are much too comfortable with Elantris the way it is.
Trust me, I know. If the secret is to be found, it will have to come from us.
Raoden looked over the small laboratory. Remarkably clean and free from the grime that coated the rest of Elantris, the room had an almost homey feeling. Like the den or study of a large mansion.
Maybe the answer is in here, Galadon. In those books, somewhere.
Perhaps.
Why were you so reluctant to bring me here?
Because it's special, Sewell. Surely you can see that. Let the secret out, and I won't be able to leave for fear it will be pillaged while I am gone.
Then why bring me?
You aren't the first to think the answer might be in those books. Two men can read more quickly than one.
Twice as quickly, I'd guess. Why do you keep it so dark in here?
We are in Elantris, Sewell. You can't just go to the lamplighter store every time you run out of oil.
I know, but surely there's enough. Elantris must have had stores of oil before the Riode.
Ah, Sewell. Still don't understand, do you? This is Elantris, city of the gods. What need have gods of such mundane things as lamps and oil? Look at the wall beside you.
Raoden turned. There was a metal plate hanging on the wall beside him. Though it was tarnished with time, Raoden could still make out the shape etched into its surface. Aeon Aeshi, the character he had drawn just a few moments ago.
Those plates used to glow more brightly and steadily than any lamp, Sewell. The Elantrians could shut them off with a bare brush of their fingers. Elantris didn't need oil. It had a far more reliable source of light. For the same reason, you won't find coal or even furnaces in Elantris. Nor are there many wells, for water flowed from pipes like rivers trapped within the walls. Without Aeondor, this city is barely fit to be inhabited.
Raoden rubbed his finger against the plate, feeling the lines of Aeon Aeshi. Something catastrophic must have happened. Something so terrible, it caused the land to shatter and gods to stumble. Raoden's thoughts were interrupted by a pain from his stomach. It wasn't like hunger he had experienced on the outside. His stomach didn't rumble, yet the pain was there, somehow even more demanding. He had gone 3 days now without food, and the hunger was beginning to grow insistent. He was only just beginning to see why it and the other pains were enough to reduce men to the beasts that had attacked him on his first day.
Come, there's something we need to do.
The square was much as it had been the day before. Grime, moaning unfortunates, tall, unforgiving gates. The sun was almost three quarters finished with its trek through the sky. It was time for new inductees to be cast into Elantris. Raoden studied the square, watching from atop a building beside Galadon. As he looked, he realized that something was different. There was a small crowd gathered on top of the wall.
Who's that?
Raoden pointed to a tall figure standing high on the wall above Elantris' gates. The man's arms were outstretched, and his blood-red cloak was flapping in the wind. His words weren't audible from such a distance, but it was obvious that he was yelling.
A Dorethi Gion. I didn't know there was one here in Aerilon.
A Gion? As in High Priest?
I'm surprised one would come this far east. They hated Aerilon even before the Riod.
Because of the Elantrians?
Yes, though not so much because of Elantrian worship, no matter what they claim. The Dorethi have a particular loathing for your country because their armies never figured a way to get through those mountains to attack you.
What do you suppose he's doing up there?
Preaching. What else would a priest do? He's probably decided to denounce Elantris as some sort of judgment from his god. I'm surprised it took them so long.
People have been whispering it for years, but no one had the courage to actually teach such things. They're secretly afraid that the Elantrians are just testing them, that they will return to their former glory someday and punish all the unbelievers.
Still? I would have thought such beliefs would be gone after 10 years.
Even yet, there are many who pray for or fear the Elantrians' return. The city was strong, Galadon. You can't know how beautiful it once was.
I know, Sul. I didn't spend all of my life in Dúladel.
The priest's arms rose in a crescendo, and he delivered one final wave of screams before spinning around and disappearing from view. Even from a distance, Raoden could feel the hate and anger in the Giorn. Galadon was right. This man's words had been no blessing. Raoden shook his head, looking from the wall to the gates.
Galadon, what are the chances of someone being thrown in here today?
Hard to say, Sul. Sometimes weeks go without a new Elantrian, but I have seen as many as 5 cast in at once. You came 2 days ago, that woman yesterday. Who knows, maybe Elantris will have new flesh for the 3rd day in a row, Golo?
Raoden nodded, watching the gate expectantly.
Sul, what do you intend to do?
I intend to wait.
The newcomer was an older man, perhaps in his late 40s, with a gaunt face and nervous eyes. As the gate slammed shut, Raoden climbed down from the rooftop, pausing just inside the courtyard. Galadon followed, a worried look on his face. He obviously thought Raoden might do something foolish. He was right. The unfortunate newcomer just stared morosely at the gate. Raoden waited for him to take a step, to make the unwitting decision that would determine who got the privilege of robbing him. The man stood where he was, watching the courtyard with nervous eyes, his thin frame pulled up inside his robes, like he was trying to hide within them. After a few minutes of waiting, he finally took his first hesitant step, to the right, the same way Raoden had chosen.
Come on!
Raoden strode out of the alleyway.
Oh, foolish soul.
Teoren?
Raoden chose a common Aeonic name. The spindly newcomer looked up with surprise, then glanced over his shoulder with confusion.
Teoren, it is you!
Raoden wrapped his hand around the man's shoulder.
Right now you have 2 choices, friend. Either you do what I tell you, or you let those men in the shadows over there chase you down and beat you senseless.
The man turned around to search the shadows with apprehensive eyes. Fortunately, at that moment, Sheor's men decided to move, their shadowed forms emerging into the light, their carnal eyes staring at the new man with hunger. It was all the encouragement the newcomer needed.
What do I do?
Run!
Raoden took off toward one of the alleys at a dash. The man didn't need to be told twice. He bolted so quickly that Raoden was afraid the man would go careening down a side alley and get lost.
Zool!
Galadon realized what Raoden was doing. The large Duladan man obviously wouldn't have any problems keeping up. Even considering his time in Elantris, Galadon was in much better shape than Raoden.
What in the name of Dolokin do you think you are doing, you idiot?
I'll tell you in a moment. Right!
Raoden took off down a side alley. The two men followed, as did the group of thugs, who were gaining quickly. Fortunately, Raoden's destination wasn't far away.
Rulo!
Galadon realized where they were going. It was one of the houses he had shown Raoden the day before, the one with the unstable staircase. Raoden sprinted through the door and up the stairs, nearly falling twice as steps gave out beneath him. Once on the roof, he used the last of his strength to push over a stack of bricks, toppling the entire pile of crumbling clay into the stairwell, just as Galadon and the newcomer reached the top. Galadon walked over and looked through the hole with a critical eye. Sheor's men gathered around the fallen steps below, their feral intensity dulled a bit by realization.
Now what, genius?
Raoden walked over to the newcomer, who had collapsed after stumbling up the stairs. Raoden carefully removed each of the man's food offerings, and after tucking a certain one into his belt, he dumped the rest to the hound-like man waiting below. The men fought violently over the food. Raoden stepped back from the hole.
Let's just hope they realize that they're not going to get anything more out of us and decide to leave.
And if they don't?
We can live forever without food or water, right?
Yes, but I'd rather not spend the rest of eternity on the top of this building.
Then Galadon shot a look at the new man and pulled Raoden to the side.
Sul, what was the point of that? You could have just thrown them the food back in the courtyard. In fact, why save him? For all we know, Sheol's men might not have even hurt him.
We don't know that. Besides, this way he thinks he owes me his life.
So now you have another follower, at the cheap price of the hatred of an entire third of Elantris' criminal element.
And this is only the beginning.
I'm a jeweler. Marie Shay is my name.
A jeweler? That won't be of much use.
Marie Shay looked at him indignantly, as if having forgotten that he had, just a few moments ago, been cowering in fear.
Jewelry making is an extremely useful skill, sir.
Not in Elantris.
Galadon peeked through the hole to see if the thugs had decided to leave. Apparently they hadn't, for he gave Raoden a withering look.
What else can you do?
Anything.
That's quite broad, friend. Could you be a bit more specific?
I am a craftsman, an artisan. I can make anything, for Domai himself has granted me the soul of an artist.
How about shoes?
Shoes?
Yes, shoes.
I suppose I could, though such hardly demands the skill of a man who is a full artisan.
And a full idiot.
Hush! Galadon, please. Artisan Marishe. Elantrians are cast into the city wearing only an Aerilish burial shroud. A man who could make shoes would be very valuable indeed.
What kind of shoes?
Leather ones. It won't be an easy calling, Marishe. You see, Elantrians don't have the luxury of trial and error. If the first pair of shoes do not fit, then they will cause blisters. Blisters that will never leave.
What do you mean, never leave?
We are Elantrians now, Marishe. Our wounds no longer heal.
No longer heal?
Would you care for an example, artisan? I can arrange one quite easily. Kolo?
Marishe's face turned pale, and he looked back at Raoden.
He doesn't seem to like me very much.
Nonsense. That's how he shows affection.
If you say so, Master...
Just call me Spirit.
Spirit being the translation of Aeon Reo.
Master Spirit, you look familiar for some reason.
You've never seen me before in your life. Now, about those shoes.
They have to fit perfectly, without a bit of scraping or rubbing.
I know, it sounds difficult. If it's beyond your ability...
Nothing is beyond my ability. I'll do it, Master Spirit.
Excellent.
They're not leaving.
Raoden turned to regard the large doula.
What does it matter? It's not like we have anything pressing to do. It's actually quite pleasant up here. You should just sit back and enjoy it.
Fantastic. I'm enjoying myself already.
Serini decided not to accept her uncle's offer to stay with him. As tempting as it was to move in with his family, she was afraid of losing her foothold in the palace. The court was a lifeline of information, and the Aerilish nobility were a fountain of gossip and intrigue. If she was going to do battle with Hraithen, she would need to stay up to date. So it was that the day after her meeting with Kaiyan, Serini procured herself an easel and paints, and set them up directly in the middle of Iaedon's throne room.
What in the name of Domai are you doing, girl?
Iaedon entered the room that morning, a group of apprehensive attendants at his side. Serini looked up from her canvas with imitation surprise.
I'm painting, father.
I can see that you're painting. I meant, why are you doing it here?
Oh, I'm painting your paintings, father. I do like them so.
You're painting my... But...
Serini turned her canvas with a proud smile, showing the king a painting that only remotely resembled a picture of some flowers.
Oh, for Domai's sake. Paint if you must, girl. Just don't do it in the middle of my throne room.
Serini opened her eyes wide, blinked a few times, then pulled her easel and chair over to the side of the room near one of the pillars, sat down, and continued to paint.
I meant... Bah! Domai, curse it. You're not worth the effort.
With that, the king turned and stalked over to his throne, followed by his entourage of secretaries. Aishi hovered down next to Serini's canvas.
I thought he was going to expel you for good, my lady.
Iaedon has a quick temper and grows frustrated with ease. The more I convince him of my brainlessness, the fewer orders he's going to give me. He knows I'll just misunderstand him, and he'll just end up aggravated.
I am beginning to wonder how one such as he obtained the throne in the first place.
A good point. Though perhaps we aren't giving him enough credit. He might not make a very good king, but he was apparently a very good businessman. To him, I'm an expended resource. He has his treaty. I'm just of no further concern.
I'm not convinced, my lady. He seems too short-sighted to remain king for long.
Which is why he's probably going to lose his throne. I suspect that's why the Gion is here.
A good point, my lady.
Aishi floated in front of her painting for a moment, studying its irregular blotches and semi-straight lines.
You're getting better, my lady.
Don't patronize me.
No, really, Your Highness. When you started painting 5 years ago, I could never tell what it was you were trying to depict. And this, well, this is a painting of... a bowl of fruit?
One of these days, Aishi, something will click, and I'll figure out how to make the images in my head appear on canvas.
Of course, my lady.
Until then, let's just pretend I was trained by someone from some Sfordish school of extreme abstractionism.
Ah, yes, the school of creative misdirection. Very good, my lady.
Two men entered the throne room to present their case to the king. There was little to distinguish them. Both wore fashionable vests over colorful filled shirts and loose, wide-cuffed trousers. Much more interesting to Serini was a third man, one who was brought into the room by a palace guard. He was a nondescript, light-haired man of Aeonic blood, dressed in a simple brown smock. It was obvious that he was horribly underfed, and there was a look of despairing hopelessness in his eyes that Serini found haunting. The dispute regarded the peasant. Apparently, he had escaped from one of the noblemen about 3 years ago, but had been captured by the second. Instead of returning the man, the second noble had kept him and put him to work. The argument wasn't over the peasant himself, however, but his children. He had married about 2 years ago and had fathered two children during his stay with the second noble. Both nobles claimed ownership of the babies.
I thought slavery was illegal in Aemilon.
It is, my lady. I don't understand.
They speak of figurative ownership, cousin.
Serini peeked around the side of her canvas with surprise. Lukel, Kaiyan's oldest son, stood smiling beside her easel.
Lukel, what are you doing here?
I'm one of the most successful merchants in the city, cousin.
Lukel walked around the canvas to regard the painting with a raised eyebrow.
I have an open invitation to the court. I'm surprised you didn't see me when you came in.
You were there?
Oh, yes. I was near the back, reacquainting myself with some old contacts. I've been out of town for some time.
Why didn't you say anything?
I was too interested in what you were doing. I don't think anyone has ever decided to requisition the middle of Iadon's throne room to use as an art studio.
It worked, didn't it?
Beautifully. Which is more than I can say for the painting. It's a horse, right? A house?
It's not a bowl of fruit either, my lord. I already tried that.
Well, she said it was one of the paintings in this room. All we have to do is keep guessing until we find the right one.
Brilliant deduction, Master Lukel.
That's enough, you two. It's the one across from us. The one I was facing while I painted.
That one? But that's a picture of flowers.
And?
What's the dark spot in the middle of your painting?
Flowers!
Oh! Whatever you say, cousin.
Maybe you could explain Iadon's legal case before I turn violent, cousin.
Right. What do you want to know?
Our studies tell us slavery is illegal in Aerilon, but those men keep referring to the peasant as their possession.
Slavery is illegal, but it probably won't be for long. 10 years ago, there weren't any nobles or peasants in Aerilon, just Elantrians and everyone else. Over the past decade, commoners have changed from families that owned their own land to peasants beneath feudal lords to indentured servants to something more resembling ancient feudal serfs. It won't be much longer before they're nothing more than property.
This is worse than I had feared.
The first thing that Iadon did when he took the throne was eliminate individual landholding rights. Aerilon had no army to speak of, but Iadon could afford to hire mercenaries, forcing the people into compliance. He declared that all land belonged to the crown, and then he rewarded those merchants who had supported his ascension with titles and holdings. Only a few men, such as my father, had enough land and money that Iadon didn't dare try to take their property.
Serene felt her disgust for her new father rise. Once Aerilon had boasted the happiest, most advanced society in the world, Iadon had crushed that society, transforming it into a system not even Fjordel used anymore. Serene glanced at Iadon, then turned to Lukel.
Come.
Serene pulled her cousin to the side of the room, where they could speak a little more openly. They were close enough to keep an eye on Iadon, but far enough away from the other groups of people that a quiet conversation wouldn't be overheard.
Aishi and I were discussing this earlier. How did that man ever manage to get the throne?
Iadon is a complex man, cousin. He's remarkably short-sighted in some areas, but he can be extremely crafty when dealing with people. That's part of what makes him a good merchant. He was head of the local merchants' guild before the Riode, which probably made him the most powerful man in the area who wasn't directly connected to the Elandrians. The merchants' guild was an autonomous organization, and many of its members didn't get along too well with the Elandrians. You see, Elantris provided free food for everyone in the area, something that made for a happy populace, but was terrible for the merchants.
Why didn't they just import other things? Something besides food?
The Elantrians could make almost anything, cousin, and while they didn't give it all away for free, they could provide many materials at far cheaper prices than the merchants could, especially if you consider shipping costs. Eventually, the Merchants Guild struck a deal with Elantris, getting the Elantrians to promise that they would only provide basic items to the populace for free. That left the Merchants Guild free to import the more expensive luxury items, catering to the more wealthy crowd in the area, which, ironically, tended to be the other members of the Merchants Guild.
And then the Riode struck.
Elantris fell, and the Merchants Guild, of which Iadon was chairman, was the largest, most powerful organization in the four outer cities. Its members were wealthy, and they were intimately familiar with the other wealthy people in the area. The fact that the guild had a history of disagreement with Elantris only strengthened its reputation in the eyes of the people. Iadon was a natural fit for king. That doesn't mean he's a particularly good monarch, though.
Serene nodded. Sitting on his throne, Iadon finally made his decision regarding the case.
It occurs to me that in this case, this runaway peasant does indeed belong to the noble from which he escaped. But his children would, without a doubt, remain with the second man who found the runaway. For the children have been fed all this time by their current master. That is my will, so it be done.
The peasant didn't cry out at the decision. He simply looked down at his feet, and Serene felt a stab of sorrow. When the man looked up, however, There was something in his eyes, something beneath the enforced subservience. Hate. There was still enough spirit left in him for that ever-powerful emotion.
This won't go on much longer. The people won't stand for it.
The working class lived for centuries under the feudal system, and they were treated worse than farm animals.
Yes, but they were raised to it. People in ancient Fjordin didn't know better. To them, the feudal system was the only system. These people are different. 10 years really isn't all that long. The Aerilish peasantry can remember a time when the men they now call masters were simple shopkeepers and tradesmen. They know that there's a better life. More importantly, they know a government can collapse, making those who were once servants into masters. Aedon has put too much on them too quickly.
You sound like Prince Raeodin.
Did you know him well?
He was my best friend. The greatest man I have ever known.
Tell me about him, Mukel.
Raeodin made people happy. Your day could have been as sour as winter, and the prince and his optimism would arrive, and with a few gentle words, he would make you realize just how silly you were being. He was brilliant as well. He knew every aeon and could draw them with perfection. And he was always coming up with some weird new philosophy that no one but Father could understand. Even with my training at the university in Svorden, I couldn't follow half of his theories.
He sounds like he was flawless.
In everything but cards. He always lost when we played Tulidu, even if he did talk me into paying for dinner afterward. He would have made a horrible merchant. He didn't really care about money. He would lose a game of Tulidu just because he knew I got a thrill from the victory. I never saw him sad or angry. Except when he was at one of the outer plantations visiting the people. He did that often, and then he would come back to the court and speak his thoughts on the matter quite directly.
I'll bet the king didn't think much of that.
He hated it. Aedon tried everything short of banishing Raeodin and to keep him quiet, but nothing worked. The prince would find a way to work his opinion into any and every royal ruling. He was the crown prince, and so court laws, written by Aedon himself, gave Raeodin a chance to speak his mind in every matter brought before the king. And let me tell you, princess, you don't know what a scolding is until you've had one from Raeodin. The man could be so stern at times that even stone walls would shrivel beneath his tongue. I miss him. This country needed Raeodin. He was beginning to make some real differences. He had gathered quite a following amongst the nobles. Now the group is fragmenting without his leadership. Father and I are trying to hold them together, but I've been gone so long that I'm out of touch. And of course, few of them trust Father.
What? Why not?
He has something of a reputation for being a scoundrel. Besides, he doesn't have a title. He's refused every one the king tried to give him.
Wait a moment. I thought Uncle Kaiayan opposed the king. Why would Aedon try to give him a title?
Aedon can't help it. The king's entire government is built on the idea that monetary success is justification for rule. Father is extremely successful, and the law says that money equals nobility. You see, the king was foolish enough to think that everyone rich would think the same way he does, and so he wouldn't have any opposition as long as he gave titles to everyone affluent. Father's refusal to accept a title is really a way of undermining Aedon's sovereignty, and the king knows it. As long as there's even one rich man who isn't technically a nobleman, the Aerilish aristocratic system is flawed. Old Aedon nearly has a fit every time Father appears in court.
He should come by more often, then.
Father finds plenty of opportunities to show his face. He and Raeodin met nearly every afternoon here in the court to play a game of Shinda. It was an unending source of discomfort to Aedon that they chose to do this in his own throne room. But, again, his own laws proclaimed that the court was open to everyone his son invited, so he couldn't throw them out.
It sounds like the prince had a talent for using the king's own laws against him.
It was one of his more endearing traits. Somehow Raeodin would twist every one of Aedon's new decrees until they turned around and slapped the king in the face. Aedon spent nearly every moment of the last 5 years trying to find a way to disinherit Raeodin. It turns out Domai solved that problem for him in the end.
Who inherits now?
That's not exactly certain. Aedon probably plans to have another son. Ishane is young enough. One of the more powerful dukes would probably be next in line. Lord Tel Rai'i or Lord Roael.
Are they here?
Roael isn't, but that's Duke Tel Rai'i over there.
Lucel nodded toward a pompous-looking man standing near the far wall. Lean and strong-postured, he might have been handsome had he not displayed signs of gross indulgence. His clothing sparkled with sewn-in gemstones, and his fingers glittered gold and silver. As he turned, Sereni could see that the left side of his face was marred by a massive purplish birthmark.
Let us hope the throne never falls to him. Iadon is disagreeable, but at least he's fiscally responsible. Iadon is a miser. Telrai, however, is a spender. He likes money, and he likes those who give it to him. He'd probably be the richest man in Aerilon if he wasn't so lavish. As it is, he's a poor third, behind the king and Duke Roael.
The king would have disinherited Raedon, leaving the country with no visible heir? Doesn't he know anything about succession wars?
Apparently, he'd rather have no heir than risk leaving Raedon in charge.
He couldn't have things like freedom and compassion ruining his perfect little monarchy.
Exactly.
These nobles who followed Raedon, do they ever meet?
No, they're too afraid to continue without the prince's protection. We've convinced a few of the more dedicated ones to gather one last time tomorrow, but I doubt anything will come of it.
I want to be there.
These men don't like newcomers, cousin. They've grown very jumpy. They know their meetings could be considered treasonous.
It's the last time they plan to meet anyway. What are they going to do if I show up? Refuse to come anymore?
All right. I'll tell Father and he'll find a way to get you in.
We can both tell him over lunch.
So you're coming to lunch after all?
Well, Uncle Kaiyan did promise he'd fix Fiordel Revertis. Besides, after what I've learned today, I don't think I can sit here and listen to Iadon's judgments much longer. I'm liable to start throwing paints if he makes me much more angry.
That probably wouldn't be a good idea, princess or not. Come on. Kais is going to be ecstatic that you're coming. Father always fixes better food when we have company.
Lucel was right.
She's here! Father, you have to fix lunch!
Yala appeared from a nearby doorway to meet her husband with a hug and a brief kiss.
So you couldn't stay away after all? The lure of Kaiyan's magical kitchen was too much for you, eh?
No, Papa, she's just hungry.
Oh, is that all? Well, sit down, Sereni. I'll have lunch out in a few moments.
The meal proceeded in much the same way as dinner had the night before. Kaiyan brought out several steaming platters of food, apologizing for his wife's absence because of a prior engagement. The meal was delightful, the food good, the conversation enjoyable. Until, that is, Lucel took it upon himself to inform the family of Sereni's painting talents.
She was engaged in some sort of new abstractionism.
Is that so?
Yes. Though I can't quite say what kind of statement she was trying to make by representing a flower patch with a brown smudge that only vaguely resembles a horse.
Sereni blushed as the table laughed.
She calls it the School of Creative Misdirection. I believe the princess feels empowered by crafting art that completely baffles one's ability to distinguish what the subject could be.
There's no such thing as a school of creative misdirection.
There isn't.
No, there's the impressionist school, the neo-representational school, the abstract derivational school, and the revivationist school. That's it.
Oh, is that so?
Yes. There was a realist movement, but that's the same as a neo-representational school. They just changed names to sound more important.
Stop trying to show off for the princess.
I'm not showing off. I'm being educated.
You are too showing off. Besides, the realist school is not the same as the neo-representational school.
Deorn, stop grumbling at your sister. Kais, stop showing off.
Kais scowled, then sat back with a sullen look on her face and began mumbling incoherently.
What's she doing?
Oh, she's cursing at us in Jindouese. She always does that when she loses an argument.
She thinks she can save face by speaking in other languages, as if that proves that she's actually more intelligent than the rest of the world.
With a start, Sereni realized Kais was now muttering in Fiordel. She topped off the tirade with a brief but biting accusation in what sounded like Dulaudan.
How many languages does she speak?
Four or five, unless she's learned a new one while I wasn't looking. Though she's going to have to stop soon. Svordish scientists claim that the human mind can only maintain 6 languages before it starts to jumble them.
It's one of little Kais's life quests to prove them wrong. that, and to eat every morsel of food to be found in all of Aralon.
K.I. stuck out her chin at her father, then turned back to her meal.
They're both so well-informed.
Don't be too impressed. Their tutors have been covering art history lately, and the two of them have been working hard to prove they can outdo one another.
Even so,
K.I.'s was still displeased at her loss.
If the prince were here, he would have listened to me. He always took my side.
What was that?
I said, if the prince were here, he would have listened to me. He always took my side.
He just sounded like he was agreeing with you. That's called sarcasm, K.I.'s.
He thought I was beautiful and he loved me. He was waiting for me to grow up so he could marry me. Then I would be queen, and I'd throw all of you in a dungeon until you admitted that I was right.
He wouldn't have married you, stupid. He married Serini.
Kaiyan must have noticed the way Serini's face fell when the prince's name came up, for he quickly hushed the two children with hard looks. However, the damage had been done. Perhaps she should have listened to her father. He had been hesitant to agree to the marriage, even though he knew Teod needed a solid alliance with the new Aerilish government. Though the two countries were descendants of the same racial and cultural heritage, there had been little contact between Teod and Aerilon during the last decade. The uprisings after the Riod threatened anyone associated with the Elantrians, and that certainly included the Teoish royalty. But with Fjordin pushing the boundaries of its influence again, this time instigating the collapse of the Duladan Republic, it became obvious that Teod needed to either reacquaint itself with its ancient ally, or face Wern's hordes alone. And so Serini had suggested the marriage. Her father had objected at first, but then had bowed beneath its utter practicality. There was no stronger bond than that of blood, especially when the marriage involved a crown prince. Never mind that a royal marriage contract forbade Serini to ever marry again. Raoden was young and strong. They all assumed he would live for decades. Serini was lost in thought, and completely unaware that Kaiyan was talking to her.
What was that, Uncle?
I just wanted to know if there was anything you wanted to see in Kaiyi. You've been here a couple of days. It's probably time someone gave you a tour. I'm sure Lukel would be happy to show you the sights.
Sorry, Father. I'd love to show our beautiful cousin around the town, but Yala and I have to go discuss the purchase of some silk for shipment to Teod.
Both of you?
Of course. Yala's a fierce bargainer.
That'd be the only reason he married me. Lukel is a merchant, profit in everything, even marriage.
That's right. The fact that she's brilliant and beautiful didn't even enter into it. Thanks for the meal, Father. It was delicious. Good day, all.
With that, the couple left, staring into each other's eyes as they walked.
Ugh, Father, you should speak to them. They're so dopey-eyed, they make it hard to eat.
Our dear brother's mind has turned to mush.
Be patient, children. Lukel has only been married for a month now. Give him a while longer and he'll turn back to normal.
I hope so. He's making me sick.
Of course, she didn't look very sick to Serini. She was still packing down the food with a vengeance.
I would like to see the town, Uncle. Especially Elantris. I want to know what all the talk is about.
Well, I suppose the twins can show you. They know how to get to Elantris, and it will keep them out of my hair for a little while.
Twins?
It's Lukel's nickname for them.
When we hate, we aren't twins. We don't even look alike.
Serini studied the two children, with their similar bobs of blonde hair and their identical determined expressions, and smiled.
Not at all.
The wall of Elantris stood over Kaiyi like a disapproving sentry. Walking at its base, Serini finally realized how truly formidable it was. The wall was so high, its sides so smooth, that it obviously hadn't been crafted by normal human hands. There were enormous, intricate aeons carved into its sides, many of which Serini didn't recognize, and she liked to consider herself well-educated. The children led her to a massive set of stone stairs that ran up the side of the outer wall. Magnificently carved, with archways and frequent viewing platforms, the stairs themselves were sculpted with a certain regality. There was also a sense of arrogance about the tiered stairway. It was obviously part of the original Elantris city design, and proved that the massive walls had been constructed not as a means of defense, but as a means of separation. Serini paused along a stone railing about halfway up to the top of the wall, looking out over the city of Kaiyi. The smaller city stood like a little brother to the Grand Elantris. It tried so hard to prove its significance, but next to the massive city, it couldn't help but seem inferior.
Petty or not, Kay will have to be my focus.
Kay would be her focus, true. But she still wanted to see Elantris. There was something about it, its size, its aeons, its reputation, that she had to experience for herself. As she walked, she was able to reach out and rub her hand across the groove of a carved aeon sculpted into the side of the city wall. The line was as wide as her hand. There were no gaps where stone met stone. It was as she had read. The entire wall was one seamless piece of rock. Except it was no longer flawless. Pieces of the enormous monolith were crumbling and cracking, especially near the top. As they neared the end of their climb, there were places where great chunks of the wall had torn away, leaving jagged wounds in the stone, reminiscent of bite marks. Still, the wall was impressive, especially when one was standing on top of it, looking down at the ground below. Then Sereni noticed for the first time the large gathering on the wall's top, a short distance away.
What's that?
The twins exchanged mutual shrugs of confusion.
I don't know. This place is usually empty, except for the guards.
Let's have a look.
As the three approached the back of the crowd, Sereni saw the man who was preaching, and it confirmed her suspicion.
It's the Giorn! I wanted to see him!
And with that, Kay-Ice was gone, shooting into the crowd. Praethon stood on a small overlook, built into the Elantris wall. His back was to the crowd, but he was angled in such a way as to let his words reach them. His speech was obviously intended for their ears, and not those down below.
Look at them!
Praethon gestured toward Elantris.
They have lost their right to be men. They are animals, having no will or desire to serve Lord Yadith. They know no god, and can follow only after their lusts. As all know, animals are far beneath men in the eyes of Lord Yadith.
Why?
Why what?
Why are animals beneath humans in Mr. Yadith's eyes?
Because, unlike men, they can do nothing but follow their own lusts.
But I heard that Mr. Yadith rewarded arrogance.
Lord Yadith rewards ambition, not arrogance.
I don't understand. Isn't ambition serving our own lusts? Why does Mr. Yadith reward that?
Arrogance is different from carnality. People's service in Yadith's empire is quickly rewarded, both here and in the afterlife.
So, if we serve Yadith, our lusts are fulfilled?
No one serves Yadith but Wyrm.
No one can serve Yadith? Not even you?
It was a silly argument, a misinterpretation of Raythan's point, not a true attack on Shudereth. However, Sereni wasn't looking to disprove Raythan's teachings, just ruin his speech.
What will we do? I fear these things of priests are beyond common people such as myself.
And it was over. The people began wandering away. Most of them were laughing at the eccentricities of priests and the obtrusiveness of theological reasonings. Sereni noticed that most of them were nobles. It must have taken a great deal of effort for the Giorn to lead them all up to Elantris's wall. She found herself smiling wickedly at all of his wasted planning and coaxing. Praethon watched his carefully arranged gathering dribble away. He didn't try speaking again. He probably knew that if he yelled or fumed, he would only do more damage than good. Surprisingly, the Giorn turned away from the scattering people and nodded appreciatively to Sereni. It wasn't a bow, but it was the most respectful gesture she had ever received from a Dorethi priest. It was an acknowledgement of a battle well won, a concession given to a worthy opponent.
You play a dangerous game, Princess. You'll find I am very good at games.
Giorn?
Until the next round, then.
Praethon waved for a shorter, light-haired priest to follow him as he climbed down from the wall. In this other man's eyes, there was no hint of respect, or even tolerance. They burned with hatred, and Sereni shivered as he focused them on her.
That one worries me. I have seen such men before, and my experience has not been favorable. A dam so poorly constructed must eventually collapse.
He was Aeonic, not a Theodel. He looks like a page or attendant of Hraethens.
Well, let us hope that the Gion can keep his pet under control, my lady.
Sereni! That was wonderful! You were so stupid! And his face, he got even redder than Papa after he finds out I've eaten all of his sweets! His face almost matched his armor!
I didn't like him at all.
Daorn stood near an open part of the parapet, looking down toward Hraethen as the man descended the enormous flight of stairs to the city.
He was too hard. Didn't he know you were only acting stupid?
Probably, but there was no way for him to prove it, so he had to pretend that I was serious.
Father says that Gjorn is here to convert us all to Shudaret.
Does he now?
He also says he's afraid Raven will be successful. He says the crops didn't do well last year, and a lot of people are without food. If the planting this month doesn't go well, next winter will be even harder. And hard times make people willing to accept a man who preaches change.
Your father is a wise man, Daon.
Sereni's confrontation with Hraethen had been little more than sport. People's minds were fickle, and they would quickly forget this day's debate. Whatever Hraethen had been doing was only part of something much larger. Something to do with Elantris, and Sereni needed to discover what his intentions were. Finally, remembering her original reason for visiting the wall, Sereni took her first good look at the city below. It had once been beautiful. The feel of the city, how the buildings worked together, the way the roads crossed. The entire mass was intentional. Art on a grand scale. Most of the arches had collapsed, many of the domed roofs had fallen, and even some of the walls looked as if they had little time left. Still, she could tell one thing. Elantris had been beautiful. Once.
They're so sad.
Kai stood next to her, on her tiptoes, so she could see over the side of the stone safety wall.
Who?
Them.
Kai pointed to the streets below. There were people down there, huddled forms that barely moved. They were camouflaged against the dark streets. Sereni couldn't hear their groans, but she could feel them.
No one takes care of them.
How do they eat? Someone must feed them.
Sereni couldn't make out many details about the people below. Only that they were human. Or at least, they had the forms of humans. She had read many confusing things about the Elantrians.
No one feeds them. They should all be dead. There's nothing for them to eat.
They must get it somewhere.
They're dead, Sereni. They don't need to eat.
They don't move much, but they obviously aren't dead. Look, those ones over there are standing.
No, Sereni. They're dead too. They don't need to eat, they don't need to sleep, and they don't age. They're all dead.
How do you know so much about it?
I just do. Trust me. They're dead.